Now we want to look a bit at the doctrine of adoption, which naturally flows out of the doctrine of justification. If my sins are forgiven and I have a right to eternal life, I also learn that I'm an heir and co-heir with Christ and part of God's family. John Owen wrote that adoption is the authoritative translation of a believer by Jesus Christ from the family of the world and Satan into the family of God, with his investiture of all the privileges and advantages of that family. In Sinclair Ferguson's study of John Owen, he then summarizes Owen's subsequent teaching and says, adoption for Owen therefore involved five things. One, that the person first belongs to another family, God's family. Two, that there is a family to which he has no right to belong anymore. Can't go back to Satan's family. Three, that there is an authoritative legal translation from one family to another. That's in justification, isn't it? I'm transferred from one family to another. Four, that the adopted person is freed from all the legal obligations of the family from which he came. And five, that he's invested with all the rights and privileges of the new family. Well, so much for introduction here. I think you can feel the wonder and the amazing reality of this glorious doctrine. Adoption is addressed several places in the New Testament. The most clear being Romans 8, 14 through 16. As many as are led by the Spirit of God, they are the sons of God, etc. And Galatians 4, verse 4 through 6, as well as 1 John 3, 1 through 3. In 1 John 3, which is what I read for you, John lays before us the central and major New Testament themes of the fatherhood of God and the corresponding sonship of the believer. And these texts are Westminster Divines meant to summarize in Westminster Confession of Faith, chapter 12, paragraph 1. I want to read that to you because Westminster Confession of Faith is the only Reformed Confession of Faith that has a separate chapter on adoption. The beauty and the benefits of adoption grew in the Reformed consciousness in the early 17th century. And by the 1640s, the Westminster Divines felt the need to have an entire chapter on it. This is what they say in paragraph 1 of chapter 12. All those that are justified, God vouchsafeth in and for his only Son, Jesus Christ, to make partakers of the grace of adoption, by which they are taken into the number and enjoy the liberties and privileges of the children of God, have his name put upon them, receive the spirit of adoption, have access to the throne of grace with boldness, are enabled to cry, Abba, Father, are pitied, protected, provided for, chastened by him as a father, yet never cast off, but sealed to the day of redemption, and inherit the promises as heirs of everlasting salvation. Well, if you can someday write theology like that and pack all that into one sentence, you've accomplished quite a bit. What a rich doctrine this is. It's a doctrine of spiritual maturity. It's a doctrine that must control our entire outlook on life. In some senses, adoption is the climax of all experiential Christianity. It calls us to drop everything and to consider the wonder, the amazement. John 1 John 3 begins, behold. It's a cry of astonishment. Behold. Literally, John says, behold from what country? Behold from what country? This is something which can find no parallel in the world. A holy God adopting us and making us like himself. It's as if this is a mystery that's broken in from us from some other realm. How could it be, John says? Behold, what manner of love? Who's ever seen anything love like this love? God the Father hath bestowed upon us that we should be called the sons of God.